Hello, welcome to the Sutliffian Report, the place where the news is never hidden and the truth is always wins. Today we have Dr. Michael Vanyukov, a professor of pharmaceutical sciences, human genetics, and psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh. In many ways, he is what we would call a Renaissance man, who is joining us to talk about the anti-Semitism in academic and science organizations. This interview will surprise you. I know it did me as I was conducting it. But first, since this is a Christian news show, we start with a passage from the Bible. Today we're reading Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So it may be hard for some of you to grasp that faith can be a substance. Today in a court of law, you can win a case based on your belief that a person wrote you a check to pay a bill and did so with the intent of paying you. You can win based on your belief. Your faith is accepted as substance here in things hoped for. What is it that our faith is in? It is in the precious Redeemer who died so that we can have life eternal. This faith becomes evidence of our living out our faith. People can see that we truly believe, that we truly have faith in God who loved us first. In Hebrews 10, we learned that the just shall live by faith. Is your faith substantial enough that you are living it? Are people seeing the evidence of that by your words and actions matching up? Living a faith in Christ is not easy. It requires the one thing many of us have a hard time doing, apologizing when we have done something wrong and owning up to that mistake in a way that we will not repeat it. That's a tough one. Live that faith you have in Christ. Make it more than a private belief. It's not a piece of clothing you can take off when you go home. Substance is something that does not disappear. It remains. It lives. Live that faith. Dear Lord Jesus, help me, Lord, to be a true example of my belief in you. Help us, Lord. Help us to do that. Help the substance of our faith to become something real so that it is contagious. Help our faith that it may become something beyond our own understanding that draws others to you and not to us. For you alone are worthy of praise. May you be praised for this work you are doing in us. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, as I said, this interview of Dr. Michael Vanyukov is something special. I have to admit, as I was doing the interview, I was surprised. I mean, he's a very highly, highly intelligent man. He had answers and really real insight beyond what I actually expected. So without further ado, here we go. Started in two places, so just a second. This week I have Dr. Michael Vanyukov, a professor of genetics and psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh. A man of real insight. Hello, Dr. Vanyukov. You are a man of science and academia, and more than that, you understand the evils of communism. Please tell our viewers and listeners more about who you are so they will understand how important your recent work is.
Hi, Paul, and please call me Michael. I'm a tenured professor, as you said, at the University of Pittsburgh. I teach in several courses. But my main work is the research in the field of substance use and addiction. As a Jew who immigrated in this country as a refugee from the Soviet Union, I also follow social developments since I came here 30 years ago. That includes changes in tolerance to anti-Semitism.
Wow. Your article, When Scientists Support Hate, Racism and Anti-Semitism in the Jewish Chronicle exposes an evil and a lack of scientific understanding in academic societies. In that, an endorsement of anti-Semitism is becoming the norm. How did you first encounter this?
Well, tolerance to anti-Semitism in academic societies is a direct expression of Jew hate that has been spreading in American universities with their overwhelming progressive faculty. Using the term Jew, is no longer considered appropriate after the European genocide. So a ready replacement is used, Zionist, to ensure plausible deniability. Coming from the Soviet Union, I'm well familiar with that because this is where that switch was invented. And like there, everybody understands what is meant by when Zionists are mentioned. Everything that Israel does in trying to defend itself from endless jihad against it is interpreted as unjustified and unjust attacks on innocent Arabs. For all of that, all the Jews in the world, especially in the United States, bear responsibility, which proves that it is actually the Jews that are under attack, not even Israel. I first learned about anti-Semitism in academia in the United States by finding out about persecution of Jewish students at the American universities, such as UC Irvine, where the Muslim Student Union invites an openly anti-Semitic speakers every spring. There was a Students for Justice in Palestine event in my own university, a revolting video that slandered the Israeli army. The Students for Justice in Palestine is an anti-Israel group whose name itself erases Israel. As you know, Palestine does not exist except in the name of the League of Nations mandate and as an anglicized form of the insulting name that the Romans gave Judea after being almost defeated in the last Judean War. The university official who I unsuccessfully tried to convince to withdraw the university's support for this SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, I rejected my request, of course, and I found out that he was given a provost award for diversity in curriculum. That's the kind of diversity that is welcome there. Then there was my experience with the giving a 5-lecture course in modern Israeli history at the Osher Lifetime Learning Institute at the Carnegie Mellon University, another local university here. It was canceled after being presented for the first time, but the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic teaching continued. So that's been actually a series of encounters rather than just one. And that's not the full list, of course.
It's... I thank you for clarifying that Israel, the real reason for that term Palestine. I always laugh when I hear people say they are Palestinians. I say, are you really Jews? Yeah. Okay. That's the history of the word. Exactly. And they can't even say it when they live in Palestine. There's no PH sound in the Arabic, so it's even funnier. What is the Behavior Genetics Association?
The Behavior Genetics Association is the scientific society, a professional society that publishes a monthly scientific journal and organizes an annual meeting among the scientists involved in studying the genetic and environmental mechanisms of variation in human behavior, including behavior disorders like addiction. And it includes many outstanding scientists, leaders in the field.
So how is this? I don't know if you can hear the thunder and lightning just start here. Is the endorsement of Black Lives Matter hypocritical of the Behavior Genetics Association?
Well, first, the BGA leadership has never before expressed any concern about any diversity or inclusion. In fact, it is due to the concerns of the members that in the mid-1990s, its president, one Glade Whitney, was condemned after letting us know about his racist views. He was also an anti-Semite.
Ooh.
So it's a bandwagon virtuousness. Second, BGA support of for BLM is also partisan. That is only among Democrats where it is mainstreamed, which includes shamefully Democrat members of the U.S. Congress. Of course, BGA also is not supposed to have anything to do with partisan politics. By its bylaws, it is only to promote studies, training, and the dissemination of knowledge, nothing else. So supporting BLM, presumably in defense of ethnic justice, BGA also excuses BLM's Jew hate, dismissing it.
Excuse me, can you say that again? They dismiss it?
Yes, well, just like they dismissed it in my communication with them when I requested BGA support to be withdrawn, revoked from BLM.
Wow. So how are they engaging in the... How is the endorsement of Black Lives Matter hypocritical of the Behavior Genetics Association?
Well, that's more or less what I've just described. And I can add also that you wouldn't expect a scientific society to be engaged in the promotion, say, of anti-Semitism, right? Right.
Don't they have a big thing in academic societies against the concept of bias?
Right. Of course they do. That concept of bias does not include Jews. It is directed to sort of special groups. So what happened is that the rules that assign privilege by race have changed. And the privilege and calumnies were not erased entirely, but reallocated. And of course, both sets of rules are racism. They're immoral regardless of whether they apply to minorities or majorities. And Jews, however, like the speed of light, never change. An obvious minority, they're better than both old and updated systems. We can talk about the race. Scientifically, race is not clearly defined. It is now possible to crudely separate people by ancestry in genetic terms, but that has nothing to do with the history of slavery. That is a reference for the current updated race theory and little to do with the criteria used in the society.
Wow. It's rare I run into an academic that actually gets this. I have to say thank you, and I applaud you for standing up. It almost makes, you know, the bias statements that have to be done in academic works, it almost makes me wonder if it has to be now posted underneath the description of the Behavior Genetics Association. I mean, for every dissertation that has to be written, you have to write a statement about bias. Is there bias in the work? So are they now saying that this bias statement has to be included with their the description of their association?
Well, not directly like that, but I've actually encountered that requirement in the NIH, in particular in the NIH Scientific Review Center. Which reviews the grants that are to be funded or not funded. And the statement from this Scientific Review Center was, I actually can quote to you, that there is absolutely no question that implicit bias exists in all of us as individuals, which means accusing everybody of racism.
Wow.
I tried to argue against that in vain.
Some of these things, you just sit there, oh my gosh. So are you, you just mentioned one of the other ones, are you aware of any other academic or science societies endorsing BLM or anti-Semitism?
Not in such a blunt form as BGA, the Behavior Genetics Association, but just about every scientific society I'm familiar with has signaled its virtue by connecting George Floyd's death with anti-black racism. While there is no such connection in reality, the BLM pogroms that resulted from that connection are mentioned nowhere in those virtuous declarations. And these declarations, of course, are filled with slogans familiar to everybody who has lived under communism.
You mentioned one word that I'd just like you to have to clarify for some who are a little bit younger, but can you clarify pogroms? And I don't think there'd be anybody better to clarify that.
Pogrom is, its precise definition is a riot in which Jews are targeted specifically to be killed, robbed, burglarized, basically undergo violence that was frequently with little outcome. The word is Russian. It comes from the Russian language. And again, it is used specifically for violence against Jews, where people were killed, like members of my own family.
I taught history for 20 years. Taught about the pogroms every single one of those years. And I don't know why, but I hope none of my students forgot that. But I look at today's world, and it just seems like we've forgotten our history. We're going to be doomed to repeat it, and that's scary to me.
That's one of the few Russian words that enter the English dictionaries. In the unchanged form.
I didn't write very many questions for you, but I would love to, is there anything else you would like for us to do? Is there any solution that you see or possible way to combat this insanity of supposed scientific and academia associations?
Well, I'm pretty actually. First, of course, I would be immensely gratified if people simply spoke about it, particularly when it is Gentiles rather than Jews who speak about it, because anti-Semitism is frequently considered a Jewish problem, to put it mildly, and. However, I'm very skeptical because, you know, usually when something becomes part of a political platform, like this tolerance to progressive anti-Semitism has become part of the democratic platform, it is very, very difficult to remove. And unfortunately, as I mentioned, most of the people in academia are progressive, and of course, they are Democrat voters.
We have, one of the things that I should talk about, I talk with you really quickly about it, is we have the Democratic, the Democrats today are really remakes of communism. They're really not what we would refer to as related to democracy. We do not have a true democratic party anymore. We have a communist party in there. And in that respect, they have not left. They brought their anti-Semitism with them. Would you agree with that?
I am in complete agreement with you. And I think that the Democratic Party has evolved from a racist party to the party that tolerated communism and actually tried to get in cahoots with the Soviet KGB when Edward Kennedy contacted KGB to prevent Reagan's election, to now they are tolerant of what should be a complete taboo. They're tolerant to the tolerant to anti-Semitism, tolerant to Muslim extremism, while pursuing these mirages of the sort of irredeemable racism of America and Americans and every non-black American, or I don't know, non-cal. These are all actually horrific racist terms, the people of color. My dream, and I'm not Martin Luther King, but my dream is that color, when people are discussed, was completely banned from the language rather than being emphasized, as it has become sort of a proper thing to do now.
I have to say you're right. I mean, I grew up not knowing much about color or anything, not even being able to my parents were teachers. There was no difference. And I am shocked. I don't know how else to describe that. I mean, my church where I go is a compilation of different colors, different races, different ethnicities. You have people from all over the world there. And I can't imagine, I just can't imagine how anybody would go this way. But again, the Democrats have always been a party of hatred, unfortunately. They were started by a racist Andrew Jackson, and they seem to be picking up a new hatred every time. It was hatred against black people and keeping them enslaved. Now it's hatred against white people and Jews. And that's the other thing they're doing. They're calling, they used to say, when their party, their entity, the KKK, existed, they used to say Jews were not white.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because the criteria for determining which race the individual is in the eye of the beholder, and this is anybody who wants to use race to split the society to rule it. The current race definition is in fact the Ku Klux Klan one by pigmentation, except, as I said, the Jews who remain outcasts regardless of color. In reality, considering that, as a geneticist, so considering that the Americans of African ancestry have a very large admixture of European genes, one would need the Nazi-style Nuremberg laws to determine when the person becomes black and or white. And to remind you, the Nuremberg laws, which determined the harmful, dangerous proportion of the Jewish blood, were a foundation of the Holocaust. And another update to racial rules is the replacement of the class rules of Marxism. And this is true progress, I would say, because you can potentially change your class, but race is like diamonds forever.
Thank you. You're making me feel better about what I taught for years, because those are things I thought and hoped would make my kids scared about this concept of racial rules. But I'm shocked and appalled that I guess I shouldn't be, because it's communism is what it is.
That's what it is.
No difference.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you for joining us. How can people follow your work, particularly your written work on this topic? Because I think it's extremely important.
Well, you can search my name, say, in combination with Israel or anti-Semitism. You can also follow my blog, to which I write rather seldom, but it's a very simple name, unchartedforest.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you. I have to have you back soon. God bless.
Thank you very much. God bless you too.
So for those of you listening on Blog Talk Radio, just waiting for the video to catch up and I will continue. So just a few seconds. It's the stuff that I'm going to give you the rest of this show is just going to blow your mind. It backs up everything he said. And a lot of this came out today, this week, I should say. It's shocking how much he's backed up. So what's incredible is this week, Professor Vanyukov's article about anti-Semitism and his work exposing this evil through the interview has been backed by recent events that were made public. Take the UCLA commencement speech given by the self-proclaimed Marxist, founder of Black Lives Matter entity, Patrice Cullors. Now, according to UCLA Dean Gary Segura, Patrice Cullors is at the heart and the foundation of a movement for human rights, social change, and genuine equity under the law. So Patrice Cullors is the, quote, ideal person to deliver a message of mission to our 2021 graduates. Think about that. That's your children being influenced. Lloyd Billingsley's article in front Page Magazine revealed that this speech is not easy to find. But her 2015 statement at Harvard Law School that Palestine is our generation's South Africa, and if we don't step up boldly and encourage courageously to end the imperialist project that's called Israel, we're doomed. Billingsley writes that a call to establish the state of Israel is not out of step for UCLA. Under Vice Chancellor for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, Jerry Tang of UCLA became a safe haven for Jew hatred. Groups such as Students for Justice in Palestine and Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions enjoyed free reign, and even encouragement by faculty administrators. The strongest response for this hatred came not from UCLA, but from outside provocateur David Horowitz. Are you catching this? The strongest response to this hatred came from somebody outside. People were not taking care of their own. Just let it happen. Posters reading Students for Justice in Palestine and hashtag Jew haters began appearing at UCLA. Horowitz called on UCLA to remove campus privileges and funding of SJP because they are a hate group and as such violated UCLA's statement of principles against intoleration. On April 19, 2016, Jerry Tang responded with a letter to the entire UCLA community. Quote, back in November 2015, Tang wrote, someone put up a hostile poster accusing two student organizations, the Muslim Student Association and Students for Justice in Palestine, of being murderers and terrorists. They were posted anonymously, but an outside provocateur named David Horowitz eventually took credit. Again, he's lying. Why does an academic find the need to lie? Because it doesn't suit the narrative. We see this with lying commies, and this is just... I hate it, concept of lying. I'm not saying I'm perfect. But when academics do this, it just is so wrong. I wish there was a way to stop that. It's bad when the news does it. But when an educator or a person in charge of educators does this, claiming their truth is what they're saying is real truth. We have problems. We have severe problems. I'm going to keep going with what he said. It just makes me angry. This harkened back to the days when reactionary administrators blamed outside agitators for activism they didn't like. As a provocateur explained in a letter to Tang, the posters targeted only Students for Justice in Palestine, not
the Muslim Student Association. The posters did not accuse SJP of being murderers and terrorists. Horowitz described them as Jew haters. Think about that. Because they support the murder and terrorists of Hamas, which they do. Another poster campaign, Stop the Jew Hatred on Campus, listed names of UCLA students and faculty activists who support SJP and BDS. Kang called it intimidation, but as Horowitz explained, there is no intimidation on the posters, just a list of names. And the poster did not cast those listed as murderers and terrorists, only supporters of the BDS boycott campaign. Those bewildered by the behavior of a once great university might also consider the UCLA campaign against Professor Keith Fink. As UCLA student, Fink won three consecutive national collegiate debate championships. The debate champion went on to complete law school. When in 2008 he returned to teach in the UCLA communications department, in that role he proved popular with students, particularly on the subject of free speech. For Fink, the entire country was a free speech zone. That's what I would think, including the UCLA campus. But UCLA bosses responded by restricting access to Fink's classes. Jewish students Nagin Arista and Shahab Naimi sought out Fink's classes because he is one of the best teachers at UCLA, according to Naimi, pre-med student. Both took Fink's popular sex, politics, and race free speech on campus. But new department chair Carrie Johnson denied them credit for the class. Think about that. Department bosses rigged Fink's classroom's evaluations with false statements and phony letters, accusing him of being a racist and sexist. One from a student that didn't even know the professor. Not a single administrator reached out to Fink with support. But the students had his back. As the Daily Bruin reported, one group held a campus demonstration, holding posters reading, "Good grief, keep Keith!" And free speech is under attack as they chanted, "Rethink, keep, think." UCLA didn't. In 2017, interim dean of social sciences, Laura Gomez, declined to renew Fink's contract for reasons that were never entirely clear. Fink filed a grievance, and 1 year later, UCLA has been uncooperative with the conservative professor's attempts to receive those documents relating to his termination. Next year, UCLA marked the anniversary of a different battle. On January 17, 1969, the Black Panthers and the U.S. organization shot it out in room 1201 of Campbell Hall. The battle claimed the lives of Panthers John Huggins and Al Prentice Bunchy Carter. The U.S. group meant us, black people, but the Panthers derided them as United Slaves. Nationalists founded by Hakeem Jamal, formerly known as Allen Donaldson, and a cousin of Malcolm X. The groups were at odds over control of black studies, which endured along with Chicano studies and other non-disciplines. Since then, UCLA campus has hosted protests on the Vietnam War, nuclear weapons, apartheid, U.S. policy in Central America, and so forth. The only unwelcome protesters were those challenging Jew hate and calls for the abolition of Israel. Patrice Caloris, who wants to end Israel, became the ideal person to deliver a message of mission to the 2021 graduates. Students, parents, and all citizens need to become provocateurs against this hatred. This hatred against Jews that has crept in academia is not an American problem. It's a problem that has grown into academic society since the 1960s and 70s. You apparently didn't know that was happening. I didn't until I started learning the reasons why. See, it coincided with the growth and acceptance of Islam as an academic topic. And as the topics, as these professors seem to come to more strength in Islam, in American universities, and to gain more strength in scientific entities, anti-Semitism became safe. Think I'm wrong, go back, check. I have been studying this for a while, and it's kind of shocking when you start doing this work and seeing some of these things. It's hard to accept, I admit that. So let's think about this. Is this happening in society? Well, companies that are making social media rules outlawing hate speech like Google are making allowances for hate speech if it's directed at Jews. Eliana Johnson and Alana Goodman with the Washington Free Beacon wrote about this yesterday.
they had an article titled, Google Sanctions Use of Anti-Semitic Slogan. But it's okay. It's okay. They can get this Jew hatred out. It's allowed. But you can't write about your conservative values. They'll close you out of YouTube. They haven't shut me down yet. They took down one of my videos. We'll see. I mean, they took it down, and then I argued, and I got blessed, and they put it back up. Funny thing is my video was on how COVID-19 is a bioweapon, and it came out in March of 2020. They took it down. I says, you never looked at the video. My evidence is in the video. And then they put it back up. Okay, let me read this article. This is an outstanding article by Aliana Johnson and Alana Goodman with the Washington Free Beacon. Google Human Resources Department earlier this week sanctioned an employee's use of the phrase, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. The elimination is call to arms frequently employed by anti-Israeli activists. The company's determination came after a Jewish employee raised concerns about the anti-Semitic slogan by a top Google union official on internal company profile. Did you catch that? It's on their internal website. It's accepted. That's where it should never be. I can't tell you how many places you get fired for saying those kind of things. But it's okay if you're a liberal company. You can make sure you legalize at your company Jew hatred. This is just unbelievable. The company maintains an internal database containing contact information and personal profiles that appear in emails and other internal Google communications. The Googler who shared this phrase on its page did so as a show of solidarity with the Palestinian community, which Googlers are permitted to do in the workplace. The human resources employee wrote in an email response to the Jewish employee's complaint obtained by the Washington Free Beacon. While the phrase is, this is a quote, while the phrase used is understandably divisive, it was not intended to be anti-Semitic in the way the author used it. Okay. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Okay, Palestine is not a country. What does that mean? They're going to kill off every single Jew. Oh. So how is that not anti-Semitic? Oh, it's okay if you're liberal. If you're Google, it's okay to be anti-Semitic. But God forbid you make a statement about something truthful that has to do with conservative values. They'll shut you down. Let me get back in this article. Google's determination comes as the tech giant faces outrage and scrutiny from Jewish employees and Jewish organizations for its silence in the wake of a Free Beacon report earlier this month on an anti-Semitic blog post authored by a top member of the Google diversity team. Oh, are you catching it? The Google diversity team allows anti-Semitism in its leadership. So it's okay for the rest of the company. Yes. So this article should be considered an expose. Google will support you if you are against Jews. God forbid you're against Islam. Might get shut down. Some of these things are just that you're allowed to hate if you can hate those people that Google allows you to hate. They have a statement against free speech, against hate, that you're not allowed to do this, but it's allowed against Jews. So going slightly off this topic, this week I have learned a lot about the hate training curriculum called CRT or Critical Race Theory. This curriculum trains and brainwashes children to hate based on color. It even encourages self-hatred if your skin is white. This goes against everything I was taught as when I was studying to be a special education teacher. It goes against the principles of the civil rights movement. It spits in the face of men like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This insanity has been paired with permissiveness of perversion that allows boys to use the girls' bathroom. Now, this week, Judicial Watch revealed a Massachusetts school district was segregating students and staff based on race in, quote, a opportunity spaces. This article came out yesterday by Judicial Watch. I can say, I wish, I'll tell you later, that this does not surprise me. I have personally seen this done. So let me read this. This came out yesterday. Judicial Watch announced yesterday that it received 111 pages of records from Wellesley Public Schools in Massachusetts, which confirmed the use of affinity spaces that divide students and staff based on race as a priority and objective of the school district's diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. The word equity here, one of the words that they're using when they're hiding CRT, they won't say critical race theory, but when you hear equity along with diversity, they are talking about the critical race theory. The school district also admitted that between September 1st, 2020 and May 17, 2021, it created 5 distinct segregated spaces. You catching this? Segregation is against the law. Keep paying attention. When it's policy, it's against the law. When it's a law, see, this is where it gets into. Is this, and when it's government doing this, it's against the law. The school district is a government entity. Judicial Watch obtained the records after filing a May 17th Massachusetts Public Records law request for recording for records concerning the number of affinity spaces the public assigned, the number of affinity spaces, the policies regarding their creation and use. The topic discussed an analysis of whether affinity spaces that exclude certain races are consistent with state and federal laws, which would include the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, the Massachusetts Equal Rights Amendment, and or the Massachusetts School Attendance Law. The Wellesley Public School records include a document detailing the school district's equity strategic plan for 2020 to 2025, which includes a district equity by design plan with the stated goal of amplifying student voices by providing opportunities for affinity spaces for students with shared interests. The section of the document titled Diversity Staffing, a stated goal is to provide resources for affinity spaces for specialized populations within the wider faculty or staff. You can have ALANA, administrative leaders of color, LGBTQ, white educators for anti-racism. Wellesley Public Schools states in its plan, diversity, equity, inclusion, we will practice risk-taking and challenge one another to continuously examine systems of privilege and bias and work collect to disrupt and dismantle inequity in all its forms. Inequity. Equity has to do with outcome. You have to put in. You have to invest to get an equal outcome. That's one of the problems that I have with this whole concept. If equity has to do with outcome, if you don't put in the same amount as the other guy, and he gets the, you know, he gets the $100,000 job because he went to school, he got his bachelor's, he got his master's, and maybe he got his PhD or his medical doctorate, or his lawyer's degree. Maybe he did that, his JD. If you decided you graduate from high school and you're done, equity shouldn't mean that you make the same amount. You have to invest. You have to give your all. And this is what's scary to me. This word equity, it's appearing in a lot of places. So let me tell you why I said it's not a shock to me to see segregation. In Rochester, New York, my stepdaughter was not allowed to go to her local school for elementary school because she was white. She was supposed to go to a less safe, more impoverished neighborhood school because, again, I was told it's because she's white. I'm like, so you're a racist organization. They said, no, this is our policy. So your policies are racist. No, this is, oh, wait. Ah. So you're telling me you are functioning as a racist organization. They couldn't say that. No, because, you know, they don't believe it's possible to be racist against white people. And that has been going on since 1990 in the Rochester City Schools. It has not changed. I wish it would. I know in city schools this is probably still going on. It's hard to believe. In Ludington County, Virginia, 259 residents signed up to speak during their public comment session this Tuesday. People lined up at the doors early to get seats in the packed auditorium. The first 12 speakers were all in favor of racism being being taught and in favor of people using bathrooms based on how they feel versus their very real biological identity. Fox News wrote that when the seventh, who identified herself as the mother of a transgender Luden student, was booed after saying hate was dripping from those followers of Jesus in this room, that started things. After this stinging hate speech, which is generally not allowed, a five-minute recess was given. People were upset. Then the board voted unanimously to forbid public comment if another problem happened. Jolene Grover, an eighth grader, was one of those who had a chance to speak. This young fireball had had enough. And she gave a very, very, it's a small, but a very, very powerful speech. Let me just pull this up. Take a second here. I have to say, this was, you know, when kids stand up and they do the right thing, it's exciting. So here we go.
And if I get knocked unconscious, I don't just stop being a girl because you don't know what my preferred pronouns are. Being a girl is not all in my head. Boys who identify as girls are no different from boys who identify as boys, except in their feelings about themselves. But feelings are not why we have separate bathrooms. We have separate bathrooms because of what our bodies do in them. Bodies matter. Calling girls bigots because they don't want to use a toilet in a stall next to a boy or get undressed next to a boy is cruel and wrong. It is embarrassing enough for a girl to change a pad knowing all the other girls can hear the crinkle of the packaging. But telling her that she must be okay doing it in the presence of boys because their preferred pronouns are she, her, how evil can you be? Girls' bathrooms do not exist to validate identities.
Okay. Just waiting for it to catch up on the video. I want you to think about that. This girl. I want you to think about this. This girl is so powerful in her few. I mean, that was extremely brief. How is she in any ways wrong? What kills me is that this eighth grader has more knowledge and common sense than the vast majority of those who want to educate her or be responsible for education on that school board. It's shocking. It's abhorrent. I mean, that we should have to have an eighth grader teaching adults what's truthful. But that's what had to happen. Let me get into a little more of this. Sometime later, according to Fox News, former state at this particular meeting this week, Fox News former said a former state senator, Dick Black, a Republican, excoriated the board over its treatment of a teacher who refused to lie to students by saying the pronouns they prefer to be called by. They were attempting to fire him. And that progressive community members had organized a list of their conservative neighbors to harass and publicly shame them. The chamber erupted in cheers and prompted the board to vote 9-0 to end public comment for the rest of the meeting, which led to the loud chants of "Shame on you," directed at the board and demands that members resign. The large number of conservative parents in the room began singing the Star Spangled Banner as board members filed out. Okay, guess what's also in that room? The American flag. Yes, that flag of the United States that we so, those patriots love. You'll see why that's important in a minute. The school board superintendent
then declared the meeting an unlawful assembly and sent the police, who arrested those who stayed behind and didn't walk out of the meeting. Think about that. They wanted the meeting to go on. They continued to speak. Were they doing anything illegal? No. It seems the superintendent of Loudoun County basically is unaware of constitutional law. No surprise, he's pushing an immoral agenda. Boy, I wish it was a surprise. Spencer Brown with Town Hall reminds us that this push to train our children in hatred is also being pushed in the armed services, thanks to General Mark Milley. I'm not too happy with this man. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That to me is shocking that a guy with this kind of belief structure would do this. A guy that would rise so high in an organization that basically takes boys and makes them men. At the very least, that's what they do. This Wednesday, he issued a statement saying why he supports bringing critical race theory into the American military while admitting, quote, I'll obviously have to get much smarter in whatever the theory is. I'll obviously have to get much smarter? Keep listening. He said, I do think it's important actually for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and widely read. And the United States Military Academy is a university, and it's important that we train and we understand and we get it as a rationale for teaching critical race theory. The word is they are teaching it as fact, our military. That is brainwashing. At the very least, he's taking good men and women and teaching them to hate others based on their skin color. There are laws banning this in our military. There are laws banning segregation and things like this, but he wants to teach hate. Guess what? Some people won't let this go, but I want to read one more thing Miley did. In defending the practice of including critical race during the military training, Miley noted, I've read Karl Marx. I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. So what is wrong with understanding and having some situational understanding about the country for which we are here to defend? Again, the issue is not teaching it in a way that allows criticism. However, he will criticize those who oppose it. He said, I personally find it offensive that we are accusing the United States military and our general officers, our commissioned, non-commissioned officers, of being woke or something else because we're studying those theories that are out there. You're not studying them. That's the problem. If you were studying to critique it, that would be something different. You're not. You're trying to create a form of propaganda, a stream for massive brainwashing. Again, that wouldn't be allowed. Why? Oh, I'm going to read you a letter that will make you happy. Some people just couldn't let this stand. Who am I talking about? Starting with retired Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He couldn't let this go. He wrote a letter which was signed by 600 other U.S. military veterans. The letter was shown to American Military News this Monday. Anyone interested in a copy of this letter can contact me on Facebook or on LinkedIn. I'll send you the link. This is powerful. He wrote, I should say they wrote because they all signed it. I have to say I'm very impressed. Open letter. From retired U.S. military and veterans. As former members of the U.S. military who have proudly served our nation, we write to express our support for constitutional freedom and liberty and our concern for our country as many powerful forces seek to bring socialism and Marxism to our land. When we agreed to serve our country, we pledged to support and defend the U.S. Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
during our active duty service. We did just that. Today, although no longer active duty warriors, we are still bound to this pledge and believe we are ethically obligated to protect our country. As such, we put our nation's leadership on notice. We believe the hard left turn towards socialism and Marxism endangers our citizens and the future of this great nation. Although a difficult step to take, we believe this step is necessary for us to continue to demonstrate the integrity and moral courage our oath requires. We are disgusted by the dismantling of the rule of law in our great country. We never thought we would see the return to Vietnam-style disdain for public service. Unfortunately, this disregard and disrespect is corrosive and will lead to a dangerous situations for citizens and law enforcement. A revolving door for criminals and a two-tiered justice system that offers up different penalties based on the viewpoints of the accused. That must end. It disturbs us to see the erosion of fair and honest elections. Civilians doubt that our election system accurately reflects the will of the people. Current servicemen and women struggle to find clear instructions on how they can execute their own constitutional right to vote and doubt their ballots will be counted. We reject efforts by those who seek to avoid fair and honest elections by deeming common sense voting measures racist. The gold standard in voting, recognized through the world, is in person with identification. Yet politicians are seeking to end this in the United States. We oppose the politicians and ideological purging of our military. The focus of our military should be on training, readiness, and defense of our nations, not leftist cultural wokeness. We decry the assault on our constitutional rights through censorship and of written and verbal expression. And we point out the complicit arrangement between private corporations and those in power to present only one point of view. Never did we think we would see the day when our media resembled bravada. Bureaucratic abuses that have led to business and school closures and excessive lockdowns should not be tolerated by the American people. We did not get our rights from the CDC, the FDA, or from private corporations, and as such, we will not tolerate Soviet-style internal passports or anything resembling the Chinese social credit system where citizens are monitored and controlled, whether the system be carried out by government or by their corporate partners in the private sector. This continues. We stand with Israel and call upon all Americans to continue with the Mideast peace initiatives, the Abraham Accords, and oppose re-engaging with the Iran nuclear deal. Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons is not in the interest of freedom-loving individuals. We believe it is in the self-interest of all Americans to oppose this deal. We must continue to our efforts for energy independence. We believe it is in our nation's best interest to reopen the Keystone Pipeline and focus on regaining U.S. jobs and protecting the national security interests provided by energy independence. The perforation of our southern border is a lifeline for terrorists, drug cartels, and human traffickers. The current administration's position on open borders and illegal immigrants places our nation at risk from a health, economic, and safety perspective. As a sovereign nation, we have a right and a duty to protect our borders. But we're almost done with this article. We oppose the establishment of cooperative relations with China, as we believe the Chinese Communist Party is focused on global militaristic and technological domination. It is currently amassing weapons to stage a takeover of Taiwan. America is bound by the Sino-American Mutual Defense Treaty, which protects Taiwan from invasion by the People's Republic of China. Our cooperation with China is at odds with our signed alliances and is not in American self-interest. We must focus on preventing Chinese expansionism and protect our nation from attacks on our infrastructure by securing our gas pipelines and electric grids from penetration. We call upon the American people to join us in opposing the advancement of socialism by holding public officials accountable in the public square and the voting booth. We must elect local, state, and federal candidates who will always act to defend our constitutional republic. Survival of our nation and its historic values, liberties, and freedom are at stake. This is signed by 600 U.S. military vets. Nothing small. Again, if you would like a copy of this, I will send you a link, or I could just send you the attachment, send it to you as an attachment. It is powerful. I think it should be shared everywhere. Some of these things are, it just amazes me that they're not getting out to you. That's why I say the truth wins when I do this show. So with this said, I want to read an article to you I found in Epoch Times on the opinion of Dr. Carol Swain, a former professor of political science and law at Princeton Vanderbilt University's on critical race theory. Days ago, by Ella Kylinska and Joshua Phillip. This article says the one thing that we all should be looking at when we talk about critical race theory. Is it illegal? My honest belief is that it is illegal. This article starts out, critical race theory training, which pressures people not to say certain things, take a certain stance, or forces them into some segregated settings, may infringe on people's constitutional rights and even violate civil rights laws, said Dr. Carol Swain, a former professor of political science and law at Princeton and Vanderbilt universities. The main tenet of critical race theory is that people of the world are divided into oppressors and oppressed. And in the United States, all white people, did you catch that term? It wasn't some, it's all. All white people are considered oppressors who benefit from undeserved advantages, Swain told the Epoch Times in an interview on Epoch TV's Crossroads program. Whites are deemed guilty of having set up a system of systemic racism, she said. Main assumption. Being drawn from CRT. The demonization, she says, the demonization of one group of people because the color of their skin is something that is discriminatory. Okay, so you're born with that, so automatically you're discrimination? You're into discrimination? Hard to believe. How is there any academic truth to that? A lot of white people who are forced into CRT-based training and forced to confess to being a racist because of their race do not realize that they are protected by the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, and disability, explained the retired professor. Catching that? Civil Rights Act of 1964 says this is illegal. White people are protected in the same way that black people are protected by civil rights. We are not a country where it's acceptable to bully and shame people because of the color of their skin. Such acts create a hostile environment at work and may cause psychological harm to children at school. This award-winning author explained, adding that parents have reported depression, trauma, or other problems in their children who have been told that because of their whiteness or the fact that their ancestors inflicted harm, they're guilty of oppression. Moreover, the Equal Protection Clause, the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, guarantees certain protections to all people, even some non-citizens. Think about that. If a public institution, such as a school, tries to restrict people's speech or behavior, it may also be a First Amendment violation. Oh, so that superintendent in Loudoun County? This continues. Private schools have more freedom to discriminate than public ones, but students whose rights are infringed can use other bases, such as the student handbook, that guarantees students certain rights to fight discrimination, she added. Swain suggested that students fighting discrimination can also seek help from organizations defending students and individuals' freedom of speech. Association, and religious liberties such as the Foundation of Individual Rights and Education or the Christian Legal Society. Another way to counter discrimination at schools is publicity. The professor advised, students can write articles about discrimination cases and publish them in student media like the College Fix or Campus Reform. She also recommended that students also document things that are discriminatory and use the evidence when the time is right. I want to continue with this, but this article is too long for me to get into, and I have too much to share tonight. I'm going to recommend you go to the Epoch Times and read this article. It mentions Dr. Carol Swain. You definitely want to look at this. This is an outstanding, incredible article. So the insanity in America seems to be growing exponentially. I found one article I had to read the headline multiple times to believe it. When I read the article, I was still shocked and disbelief. Believe it or not, this week, Washington, D.C. elected a convicted murderer. Yes, yes, hard to believe. They elected a convicted murderer. Oh, it gets better. This murderer that they elected is still in prison. How did he run? By proxy? I have all sorts of questions. This came out 2 days ago and by Judicial Watch, and I'm just sitting here laughing when I read this. What does this say about the people who vote in this area? Are the people who live in the Washington, D.C. area naturally stupid? I mean, you really have to ask yourself if the people who live in this area know who they're voting for, don't win the election. You have to ask a lot of questions when you see this, when you hear this. You have to ask. It's just crazy. As this article starts out, as the homicide rate hits a record high in Washington, D.C., the city elects a convicted murderer to public office in a unique election featuring all inmate candidates. I wouldn't have believed if I had read this. And with Judicial Watch, I'm sorry, it's not something like Babylon Bee. This is factual. The freshly elected public official, Joel Kasten, has been in prison, oh, you won't believe this number, 26 years, and is currently incarcerated at the District of Columbia Jail. In 1996, Kasten was convicted by a jury of first-degree murder for ambushing and killing a man in the city of Anacostia's neighborhood. Court records obtained by Judicial Watch indicated that a 2016 appeal was denied. In the document, Kasten's attorneys named the victim, which is not a common practice today. Court records also reveal a speed loader, a device used to rapidly load ammunition into a firearm, was found by police under Kasten's mattress after the shooting. It contains 6 rounds of a .44 caliber ammunition as well as additional rounds of ammunition. Now, Kasten is a commissioner of D.C.'s Advisory Neighborhood Commission, which advises the D.C. Council and other local government entities involving matters ranging from liquor license applications to public safety. Well, see, now you got your convicted felon locked in prison who can now deny you the ability to get your liquor license. Do you think there's going to be some gang influence maybe from this? You got to ask all sorts of questions. And how is this guy going to do his job? Is he going to need internet access for 40 hours a week? Or is he going to get special privileges in prison to do this job? So many questions, and I just have to say, Kasten was chosen by, this article says, Kasten was chosen by voters to represent Ward 7, D.C.'s most crime-infested area. It's represented by Councilman Vince Gray, an ex-D.C. mayor who was embroiled in a campaign finance scandal. So they keep voting in the criminals? Some of these things, you sit there and you laugh because it's hard to accept, it's hard to believe, but wow. While we're talking about the work of Judicial Watch, they revealed this week that Dr. Fauci
I'm talking about they who revealed? Again, Judicial Watch. This one will surprise you also. That Dr. Fauci lied to Congress when he was interviewed by Representative Jordan. I think it was Jordan, and there was a few others. Rand Paul, I think it was actually. Rand Paul. That'd be the Senate. So he lied to members of the Congress about financing the Wuhan lab. So Judicial Watch put an article out. This is actually from the 14th. U.S. gave more money to Chinese lab for bat research than Fauci claimed. And this is in documents. This came from the Epoch Times, as they're giving credit to Epoch Times. The United States gave more than 800,000 level laboratory in China from which some believe the Chinese Communist Party virus emerged. According to the newly released documents, internal emails from the officials with the National Institute of Health and others inside the agency, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, show they discussed a question posed by Republican members of Congress in 2020 regarding how much the agency sent to Wuhan Institute of Virology. The total amount spent between fiscal years 2014 to 2019 was $826,777. Why is this money going overseas? It should be spent here. This is one of the issues I have. We should not be spending, if we're a country in debt, should not be spending money outside. That's one of the insanities. Internal emails from officials with the National Institute of Health and office inside the agency, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, show they discussed the question by Republican members of Congress in 2020 regarding how much agency sent to the Wuhan virus, the Wuhan Institute. The total amount sent, again, $826,770, according to the emails. The funding went to EcoHealth Alliance, which channeled the money to the lab for the purpose of, quote, understanding the risk of bat coronavirus emergency. Now, I'm going to explain to you again why, again, this is from 2014, between 2014 and 2019. I'm going to tell you something about this in a minute. The funding went to says we, quote, we had a modest collaboration with respectable Chinese scientists who are world experts on coronavirus, and we did that through a sub-grant from a larger grant to EcoHealth. The sub-grant was about $600,000 over a period of 5 years, Fauci told members of the House Appropriations Committee during not giving the entire truth. Think about that. So in 2015, Leonardo, an Italian news show, revealed that the Chinese lab that we're talking about had taken a virus that was communicable between bats. Oh, what virus were we talking about? Oh, this is COVID. And they made it communicable to humans. And the Italians in that show were saying, oh, there's an ethical problem with this. I mean, it's 2015. We didn't know that this was going to happen. So when we're talking about COVID-19, a hospital fired a nurse who had COVID-19 for not getting a vaccine. They fired her. They fired her because she refused the vaccine. Okay, she's already had it. That means she is immune. Think about that. You know, it's funny how science is being triumphed by stupidity and political insanity. Epoch Times had this story. This came out today, and I have to say I'm laughing. You'll hear why in a minute. Because this is truly insanity. A Houston nurse was for refusing to get the COVID-19 vaccine, said that she had contracted the virus last year and didn't need to be vaccinated. The Houston Methodist Hospital System confirmed to the Epoch Times that more than 150 employees were either terminated or resigned after a judge earlier this month dismissed a lawsuit by the workers against the company over its mandatory COVID-19 vaccine requirement. Well, I had that COVID last summer. I don't need that vaccine, and Methodist did not care about that at all. That was not an option at all, said Jennifer Bridges, the lead lawsuit plaintiff and registered nurse, said in an interview with Fox News on June 23rd. Bridges, who confirmed with Epoch Times on June 23rd that she was fired by the company, said in a Fox interview that her dismissal is a betrayal of trust.
We worked so hard last year, Bridges said. I mean, we were there through the thick and the thin and when we had no, they had no help. It was horrible. And these people that are putting forth these rules right now for us and kicking us to the curb, they weren't even there. They weren't even in the building to be seen for months. They were staying at home while we were doing all the work. In the interview, she said she's not sure why the hospital mandated the vaccination for employees. Quote, I do not know exactly why they're doing this, Bridges said. I can only assume it could be for a power grab or they're money hungry right now, but they need to follow the proper science because we do not need to be vaccinated if we had COVID. In response to the Bridges interview, a spokesperson for Houston Methodist described her statements as false. Now, I want you to think about this. The mandating of an experimental virus, vaccination, is illegal. It is illegal. You're going to see. I'm going to share some more on this. I agree with vaccinations. Vaccinations prevent you from getting something. These, quote, vaccines are not that are supposed to see the COVID-19 vaccinations. If you get them, when you go there, they tell you it doesn't prevent you from getting COVID-19. So why are you using the word vaccine? They should not be allowed. It is they are changing the definition of vaccination. Well, it may stop you from getting it. Oh, it won't stop you from getting it. So why are you using the word vaccination? This is insane. Well, this week, this is another article on this topic. In New York State, one of America's largest healthcare organizations has vowed to fight mandatory vaccinations. Oh, some of the, like I say, we're talking about Libland, New York, and the union, which tends to be liberal, is going to fight this. Well, there is good reason to fight this. Why? Because if you go to cdc.gov and look for VAS, now you want to read that, you want to download that file. It's an Excel spreadsheet. It'll take a while. It will shock and appall you. I keep telling people to do this. Go to VAERS. Download that file. It's our VAERS at cdc.gov. Download that file. You'll be shocked, appalled. It will disgust you that we are not doing enough. I wish I could tell you more about this. It's so shocking. Let me get into this. America's largest healthcare union vows to fight mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. Earlier this month, the New York Presbyterian became the first hospital system in the state to require employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19. It's a step that a growing number of hospitals across the country are taking, but one that 1199 SEIU, the largest healthcare union in the country, is prepared to fight. Whether there is a legal challenge that we can make or whether it's just a pure organizational challenge that we can make, we are not going to just give in, George Gershom, president of 1199 SEIU, said to Western New York State Gothamist. The union is headquartered in New York City, but represents healthcare workers throughout the state in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Maryland, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Gershom emphasized that he got vaccinated and was encouraged all union members to do so, but he believes medical workers have the right to make their decision about their own health. Gresham said union delegates met with Dr. Steve Corwin, president and CEO of New York Presbyterian, to express their concerns last week. Another healthcare union in New York State, Nurses Association, has voiced opposition to mandatory vaccinations, although it did not respond to requests for comment for the story. Think about this. I want you to think about this. Hospitals currently, according to this article, are only 57% vaccinated. I mean, some hospitals are fully vaccinated, but the public system for hospitals is much lower. Once you leave urban areas, is probably the opposite because you'll find more people actually doing research about these vaccinations. In New York State, in Lidland, New York, they claim that 70% of people here are vaccinated. True or not, it's kind of scary. There is a push to vaccinate children, even though factual documented studies are proving that it's dangerous. That's the stuff that bothers me, that we are trusting politics more than we trust what's going on. Even Fox News this week revealed some of this stuff. And again, this one, they revealed that 4,000 people who have been fully vaccinated in Massachusetts now have tested positive for COVID-19. Oh, again, why is this being called a vaccination? It's not a vaccination if it doesn't prevent you from getting something. This is a lie. This should not be allowed the definition of vaccination. I have serious issues with this. I'm not a medical professor. I'm not a medical doctor. But even I know what the definition of vaccination is. Don't you? Go look it up. These things, these shots they're giving you, they're not vaccinations. They're messing with your DNA. They're messing with your DNA. They're messing with other things. The Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson have claimed that there are things in there that are abhorrent and should make you think. Nearly 4,000 fully vaccinated people in Massachusetts have tested positive for COVID-19, according to recent data from the State Department of Public Health. The number of breakthrough cases in the state has been infrequent so far, accounting for approximately 1 in 1,000 vaccinated people. So you're saying there's 40,000 vaccinated people. That means you get 4,000 people who are vaccinated. Isn't there something wrong here, people? That's a pretty high number still. Think about that. Same. That is just, and that's the truth of what's going on. So now I want to get into a little bit. We're going to go across the pond to the UK, and we're going to talk about another event that's been going on. I'll talk about some of this insanity with social distancing. I think this article that came out, I had a friend point it out to me, that it's incredibly good and it just needs to be shared. The article came out this week, June 22nd, and by Connor Boyd, and he writes for, believe it or not, the Daily Mail. It's titled, "Non-Socially Distanced Mass Events Are Safe." I'm just going to read this. I want you to think about it. There were no coronavirus outbreaks at non-socially distanced mass events piloted in England, a government minister confirmed. It has raised hopes that festivals, nightclubs, and sporting matches can reopen at full capacity. They're putting it off till July 19th. More than 16 months after the initial lockdown they had in March. Culture Minister Nigel Huddleston said the trial events, including the FA Cup, Football Association Cup final at Wembley, and the Brit Awards, had not caused any cluster of infections. Oh, could that be because this was all a scam? There's so many questions here. Could they have simply given us something like hydrochloroquine and zinc and beat it all with a lot cheaper rate of investment? Yes. But because Trump was taking it, it had to be evil and wrong. So the Brits have done an actual scientific study on this. That's good. But there's some sad news in there on England this week that I want to share. An Islamic terror group in England has called for the death of Jews. What words are they talking about? Oh, jihad, to wipe out that Zionist entity. Oh, jihad to wipe out the Jews? Yes, that's what they said. Again, that's this week. The Telegraph ran an article that said a supporter of an Islamic extremist group, which David Cameron and Tony Blair each tried to ban, is being investigated by police after calling for jihad to wipe out the Zionist entity. Police confirmed that a speech made by Birmingham pro-Palestine rally final month had been recorded as a hate crime. The rally was organized by Hizb ut-Tahrir Britain, the UK wing of Hizb ut-Tahrir. The world is a world Islamic organization get together, which calls for the use of Islamic, the return of an Islamic caliphate, and has been banned in some Arab international countries. People, it's banned in some Arab countries. No, not Arab countries. Let's be truthful. It's banned in some Muslim countries. Think about that. The transfer comes after Telegraph disclosed that hate speech is to be handled as a priority threat and tackled as half of the government's counterterrorism technique amid considerations, a couple of resurgence of Muslim, say Islamic extremism. It's not extremism, people. It's part of the norm. There is a social norm for this in Islam. On a video posted online on a final month, a person recognized as Bilal Muhammad, a supporter of Hizb ut-Tahrir, recorded himself on the protests of May 16th. He mentioned, "This goes out to Muslim armies. What are you waiting for? Jihad is responsibility on you. Wipe out that Zionist entity. How dare they occupy Masjid al-Aqsa, the al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem." This goes on and on this topic. Now, I'm not going to waste a moment. I have my new book with me. You should be able to see that, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. This book is now for sale on Amazon. If you want to support me in anything that I do, I recommend you buy this book. Why? This book talks about Islamic social norms. It's all it does. It looks at Islamic social norms. I'm excited to get this out. I'm working on getting it into bookstores. That will take maybe another week. We'll see. It's kind of exciting when I think about what could be happening to get this out. But again, if you're looking for any way to support people like me, buy my book. Let me read these titles. Again, social norms. This is all about social norms. Is there an Islamic social norm that has to do with migration to Western civilizations? Think about it. Do all Muslims believe the same things? And is there an Islamic social norm for Islamic supremacy? Is there an Islamic social norm against telling the truth? Is slavery legal under Islamic social norms today? Are there racist social norms? Is there ethnic prejudice in the social norm? Are women considered less than equals in Islamic social norms? Are Muslim women required to wear the hijab as a social norm? Do Islamic social norms make men see non-Muslim women as intellectual equals or as sexual objects of pleasure? Is child marriage and forced marriage part of Islamic social norms? This goes on and asks if temporary marriage is an Islamic social norm. What does Islamic social norms say about the treatment of dogs? What about freedom of speech, music? What does it say about jihad? If you want to know the truth on this topic, I did about a year, maybe 2 years worth of research altogether on this topic. Pick it up, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad on Amazon. Hopefully I will be able to – I'm working on setting up another venue to sell this book to you. I'm kind of excited. This book is one of the hardest things I put together. I learned about hate. I found answers for why I'm seeing certain behaviors. Well, again, some of these things you just sit there and go – why? Why is this happening? And some of the articles this week that I'm going to continue to share are going to exactly this.
one of the articles I'm going to share next. I'm writing a new piece for this article, and again, it's Islamic social norms that I'm thinking. This is a social psychology point of view. When I say social norms, I'm talking a psychological point of view. So we're not just talking religion. We're talking about measuring things by behavior. Testing, is this indeed a behavior related to Islam? And how do I do that? I look at Islamic scriptures and, check and see if that's true. This is important that we do that. We look at it academically to test. So if there are Islamic scriptures that endorse this behavior, then I look and see if this behavior exists in recorded history, like the news. This article that comes from Breitbart is titled France, Muslim Migrants Far More Impacted by Deadly Cases of Coronavirus. This came out this week, this article. It came out the 19th. And this article is causing me to write my next piece. So I'm actually spending a good amount of time researching this. I've been looking into the concept called Islamization of knowledge. Now, Islamization of knowledge is a, quote, Muslim academic topic. The problem with this topic is simple. I shouldn't say it's simple. It is. Basically, the premise is that any knowledge that did not come through Muhammad or through, I should say specifically, through him, being the Quran or the Hadith, okay, so through the Quran or the Sunnah, which includes the Hadith and the Sirah. If any knowledge does not come from that, then it needs to be viewed under an Islamic lens. So basically they put on rose-colored glasses and they decide whether something's acceptable or not. So in doing this, I've been looking at this particular topic in Islamic academic circles that are translated or written in English, and I'm finding one consistent thing through all the articles I'm reading on this topic, and this Islamization of knowledge having to do with medicine. They lie. They tell each other lies about their own history. That is significant. Why do they have to lie? Because the lies they are telling are claiming inventions, claiming great things, and they don't exist. Oh, what if they don't exist? What does this mean? Why do they have to lie? Well, they have to create some truth, some imaginary world where these things are true in order for them to believe what they believe, to say the things they say. Some of this stuff is just, what does that say when, again, I have problems when academics lie. You can't trust someone. Don't need to remember. You just can't trust them. Why should we? That's why I do what I do. That's why Global Patriot Radio exists. Because the media has started lying to you. They've been, and not just lying. They're lying by taking things out and hiding them from you. That's why I say that this station is, that my show is a place where the news is not hidden and the truth always wins. It's my goal to get the truth out to you, regardless. It's my goal for you to hear the truth. Truth has to win. There is too much danger in it not winning. Way too much danger. I'm never cease to be amazed at what I'm finding in the news. This is an article, this next one, on Sweden. And I can't say I didn't tell you so type thing, but in Sweden, an Islamic State terrorist returns to Sweden and threatens healthcare workers. One of my Islamic social norms that I cover in here is hatred. Cover the
the truth behind this article, why these behaviors exist. And that would actually explain why these people with these beliefs should not be allowed to, especially to return to your country when they've already engaged in these behaviors. It's not like a social psychologist wouldn't know these things. They could predict them. Should know them. Let me read this article. It's titled, "Is Terrorist Convicted of Death, the Islamic State Terrorist Convicted of Death Threats Against Healthcare Worker?" This came out the 17th. When the returned Islamic State terrorist had her children forcibly taken into care, she threatened a health worker. The woman has now been sentenced to forensic psychiatric care. In April, the woman who returned from the Islamic State in Syria threatened a healthcare employee with death in a psychiatric ward at the Sadra Azbag Hospital. The caregiver would see his family killed. The Islamic State, she said she would kill the caregiver and his family. The Islamic State terrorist said she would find him and cut the throat of the healthcare employee's father. She said it was, this guy said, it's very uncomfortable. He said, I became scared. I took it very seriously. It felt real. The healthcare employee has told in interviews. The district court rules mental health case. Okay. So it's now a mental health problem if you make death threats, if it's based on Islam. Something to think about. I'm not saying the person isn't mentally ill, but I'm saying if these threats are based on Islam, then is she mentally ill? Or is she following the ideology of Islam? There are huge differences here. That is one of the problems I see with the way Europe is going. They do not look at Islamic social norms. The number one reason I left the name as civilization jihad. We have to look at things in a social psychology point of view so people can see these facts. Why they let this woman return, I can't understand. We could have, any person with a degree in psychology should have been able to tell that this was not good for the country. But then we run into people who are like, oh, well, it's not safe where they are, and, their children could be hurt. Okay, I could go to the part where they take the children and take responsibility of children. I can get that. Don't necessarily want to believe that, but I can understand protecting children. But expecting a person who has adopted this belief structure or grown up in this belief structure where hatred is part of an Islamic social norm, it's a problem. I want to talk about an article that came out this week this is in India. And this, one of my last articles, I only got one more after this. In India, these Muslims broke into a Hindu temple and began breaking idols. Now, historically, this guy said, well, they were instructed to do so. That's not hard to believe. I'll tell you why. Islamic histories record that this was a normal practice, especially when they went into India. What they would do is break the idols wherever they found them. Doesn't matter what country they went into. But what they do is they break these idols, and they would break them into such small pieces that they would become the walkways into mosques. Now, these mosques I'm talking about, they would take a temple or they would take a church and they would convert it into a mosque. And the broken idols would become the walkway. And they would even take the broken pebbles that were broken down into, and they would bring them back to Saudi Arabia. They were bringing them back to Medina to walk on as they went into the mosque. Think about that. So being instructed to do so does not surprise me at all. Does that mean he shouldn't have had a brain and know what, you know, expect, you know how to respect people around him? Again, if you're going to make an excuse that you were doing what something you were told, that's a problem. You can't use that as an excuse. It doesn't work. Just because you're told to do something doesn't mean you don't have a brain. This next article comes from Op India. And again, I talk about forced marriage in my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. Again, picked it up at Amazon. This article is on Pakistan. A father of four abducted and married a 13-year-old Christian employee. Did you catch that? A 13-year-old Christian employee after forcefully converting her to Islam. In Pakistan, that's an illegal thing. Her birth certificate says she was born in 2007. However, when they converted her, they say, oh, she's 19. Why'd they do that? Because in Pakistan, there's a law that says you cannot forcibly convert somebody at a certain age. They have to be, you know, a little bit older. Otherwise, it's illegal. So this is an acceptable practice? Yes, in Pakistan, it is. Let me read this article. Religious minorities continue to face discrimination and persecution, such as the misuse of anti-blasphemy laws, kidnapping, rape, forced conversions, and enforced disappearance of non-Muslim girls in Pakistan. The forceful conversion program have always been unleashed against the minority Hindus, Christians, and Sikhs living in Pakistan with utmost brutality. There have been many such cases reported in the recent past. In yet another case of religious persecution and sexual crimes against children, a 13-year-old Pakistani Christian girl, Nayab Gill, was abducted from Gujranwala division located in Punjab, Pakistan, forcibly converted to Islam, and married to an already married Muslim man who was a father of four girls last month. Now, a video clip of her shattered and helpless parents is doing the rounds on social media, where they narrate their plight and plead for justice. They have to plead to have their girl returned to them. They're sick, their 13-year-old girl that this perverted man has kidnapped and raped. Because she was a non-Muslim and now she's Muslim in Pakistan. Will they do anything? And this is the thing. If you are a non-Muslim and you plead your case like this, maybe they'll return. Again, this girl was abducted. She was kidnapped and forcibly converted and forcibly married. What's the result? She's raped at 13 years old. He already has three wives and four kids after he raped her. He's ready to be done with her. I have so many. This is what was hard. I put this forceful rape, all this stuff in here. Why in this book, I'm saying in here, this book I'm working, that I've worked on and now have out, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. Go and buy this book on Amazon. Please support my work. The Cancer of Civilization Jihad is very, it's a very real topic. The facts that are in here will blow your mind. Like I said, it's a hard researched book. You have to get out there to find the truth for yourself. Why do I say that? There are too many people who just accept things the way they are. They don't do their own research. Why is this a problem? Because if you do not do your own research, you set yourself up for a fall. You have to find out what's true. Stop accepting the mass media as a place where you can find truth. I don't trust Fox. I don't trust 99% of it. Why? Because I do my own research, and sometimes I find out they're lying, or they're deceiving, or they're leaving things out. Find the facts. Get to what we've taught you in social studies classes for years and years and years. Find the primary sources. Find them. Do not trust things. Don't trust the news. Why do you think I had the man I had on today, Dr. This doctor this interview was so powerful. Why? Because he got the truth right from his mouth. That's a primary source. He shared the facts with you. What happened to our news that they don't want you to think this way anymore? What's happening in our schools that they don't want you to think this way anymore? This scares me. Are we going to have to start Christian schools all around the country because lies are being told to our children? I mean, they've already been told. That's not a question. But in order for our children to become intelligent and question and not become purveyors of lies, which I'm talking about becoming sharers of those lies, do we have to protect our children by not allowing them to go to public schools now? That concept bothers me. I'm really concerned. Well, I want to say thank you for listening. It has, this was a powerful show. I'm hoping to hear back from you. One of the ways you can reach out to me, again, is through LinkedIn. I have a good many connections there. On Facebook, you can join the Sutliffian Report. That is a group on Facebook. Or you can find me on Facebook. I do very little Twitter. And I do some MeWe. Reach out and find out what is true. Do your own research. Contact me. Ask me to come to speak to a group near you. I'm trying to get the truth out, even though it's not pretty. I do not believe what bleeds leads, but I think facts are important. So I want to say thank you, and God bless. Now, I have edited the video broadcast, and the reason I did that is because I cannot play my favorite song, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue there, but I can play it here.
American girls and American guys will always stand up and salute, we'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Here comes Sam, put your name top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it's sincere, your courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Temple Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. It's all brought to you courtesy of